We are thrilled to have Carla Rota joining us today. Just a great character, Morris O'Brien, and we are pleased to have him sharing his insights and stories and all kinds of good stuff with us. I actually dressed up today because of Morris O'Brien, but not only Morris, but also some of the other characters that you played. I just watched a movie called Trigger Point.
Oh, you watched that? Yeah,
I did. I loved it. I loved it. And but my question to you, I guess let's start with there, and then we'll move into 24. Okay. Is there a do you have a clothing allotment when you sign up for a movie that says I have to be the sharpest one on set? Because today I'm wearing a jacket and a shirt I always wear a shirt, but a collared shirt for the first time on this show because I felt I needed to dress up. Because we were going to have you on today.
You know, it's amazing, actually, how many times I go onto a show, whether it be a film or a TV show, and I get an amazing wardrobe out of it. You know, for some reason or other, the characters that I usually play scream, please dress me nicely.
Yes.
Now, the very interesting fact about what happened on 24 is that I'm not sure if you remember, but wardrobe wise, I was constantly in these like paisley shirts.
Yes, you were. Yes. I remember.
And the reason for that is because it was deemed that I naturally looked too much like a bad guy. And so the wardrobe had to reflect the fact that I wasn't a bad guy, right? Because as you also probably know, if you have hair on your face,
right,
and no hair on your head, you must be evil.
In the 24 world, yes.
Well, in most TV shows and films.
Good point.
And also, if you have an accent, well, then you're doubly evil, right? So it was decided, paisley shirt all the way. And I think, when I got beaten up and the shirt had to then be replaced, they just replaced it with another paisley shirt.
Right, yes.
And I'm not sure if you remember, but Mad Magazine did a little spoof section on 24.
Okay.
It's quite funny. and they had me at a computer. Yeah. And there's a thought bubble coming out of my head and I go in the thought bubble, I'm like, "Oh shit. Someone's already taken the MySpace name Baldy McPaisley."
Okay. Did you grow up reading Mad Magazine?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, how cool was that then?
It was super cool. It was super cool and it was very funny. It was actually one of those things where I actually, you know, how often do you look at something and literally like almost do a spit take? It was great. It was a very, very funny little.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I grew up with Mad Magazine where you folded the back cover to get the different picture.
Oh, yeah.
All the cool things and all the
absolutely.
The distinct. Yeah. But yeah, if you arrive, I mean, you've arrived. If you're in Mad Magazine as Baldy McPaisley.
That's it. I mean, you know, I realized at that point that I'd reached the pinnacle of my career and it was all going to be downhill from there.
Well, I would disagree with that, but we'll talk about that for sure. Because like I said, you play some really cool characters. Certainly moving from, again, we'll come back to 24, but to Little Mosque.
Yeah.
So I rewatched the pilot yesterday. I was like, oh my goodness, they tackled this exactly what you said about being darker skin and bald and all those elements. You tackled that right in the pilot episode.
Yeah.
It was a little frightening to have this radio guy whose job was to tell you about your freedoms and how, you know, it was a little too close to home right now with everything that's going on. Now this radio guy who was stirring up the small town to get them upset about their freedoms being taken away by this group of people that were coming into town. So I'm amazed that you tackled it. I don't remember it as much, the humor. I remember the humor, you know what I'm saying? But I remember that you hit it head on. I thought right from the pilot.
Right.
Let's elephant in the room. Let's do a show about the elephant in the room, which I thought was amazing.
Well, you know, the hilarious thing about Little Mosque, aside from the fact that it sometimes was hilarious, it was that I was shooting it contemporaneously, you know, so I was shooting 24.
Right.
And they were kind enough on 24 to allow me a bit of time to go and shoot the first and second season of Little Mosque. And, you know, it was a little disconcerting for the other players on Little Mosque, because their schedules had to revolve around mine, right, which I apologized for profusely. But you know, I'm on 24. It's not like I can say, hey, listen, I want some time off. So we shot the show, and at the time, Little Mosque came out. It was a really big deal because there was a lot of Islamophobia around.
Yes, it was.
There was a heightened state of alert about anything Islam, and suddenly we're making this TV show about a Muslim population and community in Canada. And so I'll never forget that we were invited, all the people from Little Mosque were invited down to, I don't remember the building now, escapes me, but essentially it's in Beverly Hills. And I feel like it's the Norman Jewison Center. Don't quote me on that. Cool. But there was a panel, and we were there to discuss Little Mosque and, you know, all things Little Mosque. And it got really political, though.
Sure.
Because in the audience, there were a bunch of really well-dressed and austere, like, and severe-looking guys who were all Muslim, right? And there was a big quotient of the audience that were 24 fans.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
And honestly, at a certain point, I was wondering whether I was going to get out of there alive.
Wow. Really? Yeah.
Seriously,
yeah.
Because they were like, you know, one person would play behind me. This question is for Carlo Rota. Carlo, you're on 24, and you know what it's like. You know what, you know, terrorism is. And now what are you doing on this show about Islam? Right? I'm like,
right. Yeah, you're boxing me into a corner that I'm not comfortable being in.
And you're wrong. And they're wrong, right? But also, you have to remember the time.
Right.
Different time.
Yeah.
And it was really quite aggressive, and but ultimately, it was really lots of fun to be doing both shows.
Sure.
Carlo, I work for a TV station called Yes TV in Canada, and we air Little Mosque. And
oh, great.
And every time Little Mosque is on, I always say, oh, that's Maurice O'Brien from 24.
Yeah.
So it's amazing that you're on Little Mosque, and I enjoy Little Mosque. So I thought you did a great job on that show, and you played a great character on that show.
Oh, but, yeah. I'm starting it all over again. I watched the pilot, and I'm like, I need to keep watching this again, even though I watched it through the first time, because it's a different, it's this many years later, and it has a different significance watching it now.
Yep.
The same Islamophobia still exists, obviously, but we're at a different place with
show.
It.
It was a difficult show for them to make and to write. You know, I will always applaud the CBC for having the sand to air that when they did. But, you know, very, very difficult line to walk when you're writing shows like that. You know, you're writing a comedy. It's a comedy about a culture, and the culture is firmly attached to the religion. And it's very difficult to sometimes write comedy and feel like you're just having fun as opposed to making fun. Right. It was a really difficult show for the writers, but I think for the most part they did a really good job, and like I said, it was just tons of fun to be involved and you know, the juxtaposition.
Well, that character was fun. Your character was fun. Like it was.
Yeah.
You seem to be having a lot of fun doing it.
Well, I based the character on a lifelong friend of mine, Akil. Who is a Londoner like myself. And I basically met Akil when I was 6 years old, and because his family lived next door. And his family, his father's Pakistani, his mother's Spanish. So it was like a crazy family. It's a crazy like mixture of cultures. Everyone's always shouting, and there was always people arriving from Spain or from Pakistan or whatever. And but Akhil grew up being a guy who did cherish his faith, but he always seemed to know the loopholes, you know. And Yasser. Yes. So I mean, Yasser, a guy who's like, yeah, I can totally be religious. Now, there is this one loophole. you know, it's like, I'm not allowed to gamble, but if we go to a casino and you gamble for me, you put the money down where I tell you to put the money down. I'm not gambling, you know. So, you know, it's like, I felt like Yasser, he was a guy that just really reveled in the loopholes of his culture.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you were doing both at the same time, which is...
For a couple of years, yeah, 2 or 3 years, I was doing both. A couple of years, yeah.
What did you enjoy most about Morris O'Brien?
Well, Morris O'Brien was an invention, and he was essentially an evolution of another character that I played on La Femme Nikita.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So. The showrunner of La Femme Nikita, Joel Sono, he cast me in Nikita. That's also where I met so many of the other 24 people, like John and Brad,
right,
et cetera, Michael. And so he cast me in La Femme Nikita. And the character on La Femme Nikita was a lot more of like a... sort of like a Londoner with a lot more, you know, pizzazz, and he was definitely shady, but a lot of fun, right?
Right. Yeah.
And then now cut to, I moved to LA at a certain point. Now 24 had already been on for four or five seasons by that point, but as soon as I moved to LA, I did what I think most people don't do, and that is I literally called people I'd worked for in Canada, right?
Yeah.
Which I was told afterwards by a bunch of, you know, people like, you can't do that.
People that know better.
You can't. I'm like, well, what are they going to do? Put me in, you know, LA jail? I mean,
right, yeah.
They're either going to take my call or not take my call, right?
Yeah.
And so Joel, God bless him, he did take my call. He's like, oh, so you're in LA? Yeah. Come up And let's have a chat. And I drove up to Chatsworth, and he literally, like, he was having a meeting at the time. He's like, Carlo, you're here. That's great. You're here. That's amazing. I'm really busy right now, so thanks for coming in. So I left there going, well, I drove all the way to Chatsworth, basically for Joel to say, thanks for coming in. And I drove back to my friend's house that I was staying with at the time. I was sleeping on his couch. Yeah. And I told him about it, this friend of mine. And he's like, oh, you don't do that. I mean, it's just, it's not, you know, it's LA. Like, nothing's going to happen for that, from that meeting, right? So there I am on my friend's couch, and he's basically just trying to educate me about Los Angeles. He says, you know, it's Los Angeles. You know, people call all the time, but they nothing, you're going to be prepared that nothing will happen from it.
Right.
And as he's saying that, my phone rings and it's Joel. And he's like, yeah, sorry, I was like stuck in that meeting. I couldn't speak. Listen, we're totally going to write a character for you. We'll just write the character for you. And I'm like,
wow.
And I was like, okay. So it was a phenomenal introduction to Los Angeles. I mean, talk about seeing LA through rose-colored glasses.
Right.
You know, as my friend who I was staying with still jokes to this day, he was like, yeah, Carlo came to LA and it was Monday and we had no idea if he was going to be successful by Tuesday.
Right? So people are telling you, don't you know the rules? You don't do that. That's exactly, not the, well, exactly. This is who I am.
You've broken the rules, you've phoned producers, and now suddenly people are writing you, you know, into their shows. So so that's basically what happened. But, you know, when Joel was talking to me about Morris, he's like, you know, he says he wants to use a little bit. He wanted to use a little bit of the La Femme Nikita character. He said, but Morris was different. He was more involved. He didn't have the sleaze factor.
Right.
And of course, you know, even though they liked a little bit of levity, it wasn't, you know, there wasn't the same comedic hit.
Right.
that I had on the Femme Nikita, right?
But you added for 24, you added just enough levity to lighten the situation. Or I remember the scene where you come in and say, "Where's my wife? I need to talk to her." And there was just some funny, you know, and again, maybe Marilyn too, with her facial expressions. Mm-hmm. There was levity to the relationship.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And that's, you know, by design and by the fact that I have very hard time not putting levity into some of the stuff I do, most of the stuff I do, even if it's like a heavy drama.
Right.
I feel like there's always room for, you know, it's the smiling at a funeral concept,
sure.
You know?
Yeah.
It just, you know, the late, great Peter Ustinov always said that there's no such thing as a comedy without drama, and there's no such thing as a drama without comedy, mm-hmm. You know? I'm probably paraphrasing him at this point, but so forgive me about that. But so it's difficult for me not to, even if it's a highly charged dramatic scene. Yeah. It's difficult for me not to find one point where there's some levity, right? Yeah.
Which would bring me to Iacovetta.
Yeah, exactly.
Iacovetta. The person that told me I needed this, that told me I needed to watch that movie, I didn't even like, but I owe them a life debt for pointing me to that movie, because I didn't mean to interrupt. Your line about the 90s are killing me. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Please, Iacovetta. Yeah. I shouldn't have interrupted.
It's no, not at all. But Iacovetta is a very typical example of what I just said. You know,
right?
When I was casting that film, they were not expecting to get so many laughs out of Iacovetta, right? And they were like quite surprised by it, you know. And it's one of those great things that happen when you're cast in something and you bring more than what's written on the page or what's intended. You give them a little bit more, because you find that the response you get is, you know, like, wow, that was so entertaining. But it, you know, it's not like you've actually given a great deal more. What you've done is you've just given a little bit of, you know, a tweak, a levity tweak, if you like.
Right.
So that in a scene that would have had no smiles whatsoever, suddenly you've got people laughing out loud. And, you know, that's another thing too, is that sometimes when it comes to certain characters and certain writing, you've got to give permission. It's almost like you have to give people permission to laugh, right?
Yeah.
And the tweaking, the little levity tweaking, kind of gives them permission to laugh. And then once they start, they're like, "Oh, great! Now we get it." Yeah, it's totally dramatic. I still am afraid of this character. I'm still involved. He's still compelling. Whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
But I can still. But I'm still allowed to laugh.
Yeah. He's a bit unhinged too, because
very much unhinged.
Half of what he's saying is funny, but then he's a very dangerous individual. Yeah, no, it's
absolutely. Yeah, lots of fun. Yeah, that movie was a lot of fun to make, and again, weird casting with that, because I actually got a different role in that movie. I got the role of a much smaller role. Which I was very happy to get. It was an Irish guy, Scottish guy that works in the butcher shop.
Right. Okay.
In that scene, that's the role that I originally got. And I get a call at home from Tina Gerusi, who was casting that film, and she's like, you know, do you want to go to meet the director? He wants to talk to you about something. I'm like, really? What do you want to talk to me about? I don't know, but there's a party going on at some house in, you know, like in the beaches or something. They rented this house, They printed this whole house. And so I go there and I'm like, am I going to a party or am I going to a meeting?
Right.
And I walk in with 12 beers. I'm like, well, I'll just hedge my bets. If it's a party, I'm bringing, you know, beer. Right. And so then I walk in and it's like, hey, oh yeah, Carlo's here. And, you know, Willem Dafoe's like, Carlo, Willem, Carlo. Okay, Carlo, let's go up to the bedroom and I want you to audition for this character.
Right? It's not a meeting, it's an audition.
Yeah, it was an audition in the bedroom of the house.
Yeah.
And, oh my God, it was hilarious. And I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And so that was another one where I'm like, I'm going to play this guy with as much sinister humor as I can.
Sure.
Because I actually didn't know. It was just, I didn't know what I was doing, right? And the timeline between seeing what I had to do and doing it was like minutes.
Razor thin. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So a lot, as you were saying, a lot of the stuff wasn't on the page.
A lot of stuff wasn't on the page. There's a thing that Iacovetta says, which I'm not sure if I can say it on your podcast.
You absolutely can. Absolutely okay. Can.
So it's in Huffington Post's top 100 movie phrases and or insults, rather. Top 100 movie insults.
Yeah.
You know, it's like number 46 or something. And it's when Iacovetta is like, you insignificant.
Yes, I do. Yes. Yes.
And I've had people come up to me on the street and go, oh my God, my mother loves you in Boondock Saints. Can I ask you a favor? Can you can you leave her a voicemail message and call her an insignificant? I'm like,
really? You want me to do that for your mother?
You want me to do that to your mother? And then, yeah, oh my God, she's going to get so much joy out of it. Okay. You know that a lot of people don't like that word.
Right. That's not a compliment. But it is in the context of, you know, being a fan of the Boondock Saints.
Well, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
Sure.
So Mad Magazine and then this list of famous quotes. That's amazing.
Yeah. That is amazing. 100 Huffington Post 100 most famous movie insults.
Wow, amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, and there's some great ones in there. There's some really great ones in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Switching back to 24, I did love your dynamic between, you know, Chloe and Morris in all the seasons that you were in, you know, from seasons 4, 5, 6 and 7, and
yeah.
I thought Morris was a great character and just the back and forth between your character and Chloe was awesome. And I also loved the Chloe arrest scene extra that they did after season 8. I thought that was...
Yes, that's right. Yes, yes.
That was very interesting.
Yeah. Which is the last time we saw you.
Yes, because...
That's the last time you saw me, yeah.
We shot that another day.
Separately. We shot that separately, yeah.
They mentioned your character and Prescott...
Yes,
has died in a car accident.
Yes,
which in Live Another Day, Chloe mentioned that to Jack when they caught up after 4 years. So
right.
that was very sad for the audience.
Yes, and I'm glad that we shot that extra scene. Sure. Because you know it's like I always like it when things resolve in storylines resolve, and, yes. I'll tell you, and I'm sure that most other actors feel the same way. I am more attached to the characters that I play than I am to myself, right? I mean, I feel like the world that is created when you when you play a character, it really needs to be honored. And I get more joy out of the storylines for those characters than I get out of my own storyline, because my storyline's still pretty damn good. But I really do cherish... being faithful to, you know, the storyline, to the world that's created. And if there's a resolution that's needed, it's great to achieve that resolution and not to leave things hanging, right?
Right.
So I'm very thankful for writers that have afforded me that privilege. Yeah.
Which would lead to my next question, is that we never actually see you go. And the rule on 24 is that even if you've seen somebody, there's still some leeway there, but we didn't, we just got, oh, by the way, they're gone. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That could, I mean, would you be open to a return of Morris if there was a way that,
to bring you back?
I think it's pretty easy.
I would always be open to a return of Morris. It's one of my all time favorite characters, you know, in a rather long time that I've been doing this. Morris really stands out. There was obviously a number of logistical issues in letting that storyline lie where it lay, so to speak, you know. So I feel like that side of things, yeah. If there was ever an opportunity to fine tune them and to bring them into out of the darkness, so to speak, I would be totally into doing that. Yeah.
Excellent. Again, it's nice that there's a resolution, but it is 24.
Yes. So, yeah.
Never. It's like never say never again.
Right. Yeah,
it's very similar.
It's interesting too for as an audience, we talked to a lot of people over the last few weeks on the podcast, and we've been saying how 20 years later, 24 continues to be grow in popularity. Ever since it's been on Disney Plus, it's growing in its fan base, and the show still works, you know, 20 years later. So, I mean, I think it goes to the writing and the directing and the production design and all the great characters, all the memorable characters that surrounded Jack in all the nine seasons of 24.
Yes. Well, you know, the clock, which is a character unto itself.
Yes.
Really is the foundation of that show.
Right. Right.
And of course it was also such a provocative concept. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to see a whole season of a show, and it all takes place in one day.
Yeah.
Yes.
And of course, as a result, you know, there obviously had to be some creative license taken. You know, there were times when, you know, Jack would make it from Santa Monica to Burbank in like 10 minutes, and you'd be like, right. I'm not in the LA I live in.
Right.
But it was just a phenomenal motivating factor, that clock.
Right.
You know, motivating for the storyline, motivating for the actors, and super motivating for an audience.
Mm. Yeah. Yes.
You know? Absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
The stakes were always sky high in 24.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because of the clock. Right. Yeah. And, you know, yeah, it was a fantastic concept, and I'm glad to hear that it still holds its own, you know.
I just watched Trigger Point that just came out on video on demand, and people that are listening can find it and watch it now, but I didn't realize until I was probably halfway into it that Brad Turner directed it.
Well, that's
and it's full of and it's full of 24 alumni, which
that's
is
right. Well, Brad, So what happened was I decided at a certain point to flee Los Angeles with my family. It was last August.
Okay.
Because the schools were not I've got two little ones. Okay. And we wanted to go. We just went to Toronto. I drove there with my dog. My dog, whose name is Morris, by the way.
Oh, very nice. As it should be.
I drove, but my family put them on a plane. Mm-hmm. So now we're in Toronto, and I just got a call from Brad saying, you know, do you want to be in this film? I'm like, yeah, Brad, sure, I'll be in the film. Yeah. You know, so that was a lot of fun. We shot it in Bayfield, Ontario.
Yeah. Okay. There aren't a lot of movie productions that happen in Bayfield, from what I understand.
I don't know. I didn't know Bayfield until we shot there. I really like Bayfield.
Isn't it beautiful?
It's so beautiful. I took some amazing pictures of the lake. That lake is enchanting. Yeah.
It is.
Lots of fun, though, you know, and lots of fun.
And film during COVID, which is a novelty.
Filmed in the thick of COVID. Yeah. Filmed in the thick of COVID. Although, I think that that was one of those, like, you know, slight dips in numbers. But still, it was, yeah, in the thick of things.
Yeah.
It's very difficult right now. Like, you know, I've shot a couple of other things. And, yeah, it's almost like the big budget shows, what they end up doing is they just end up buying a lab. Sure. They just buy a lab because there's so much testing that has to happen.
Right, right.
Just do all the restrictions. Just buy the lab. Right, just like, we'll buy the lab. You know, it costs God knows how many millions of dollars, but they, you know, they have a big budget. But yeah. The smaller shows, it's really hard for the smaller shows because everyone's always walking on eggshells.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
About whether or not someone's going to test positive, and if that person tested positive, who was that person with? Or maybe someone tested positive at one of the actors or one of the crew members' houses, and then, you know, it's like everyone's walking on eggshells.
Yeah.
It's quite stressful.
Yeah. Well, again, it was interesting watching Trigger Point, knowing that the context in which it was shot, and it comes across really well. I really enjoyed it, and like I said, anybody listening to our podcast should find it and watch it, because everybody has, for a dark story, you have a lot of fun, but everybody seems to be enjoying it. And it's basically so many Canadian actors all at once, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, obviously working with Barry Pepper was lots of fun because I've been a fan of Barry Pepper for ages. You know, he cannot put his face on screen without doing something interesting.
Right.
But, you know, also I worked very closely with Colm Feure, and you know, Colm Feure is just an amazing individual. He's like one of the most entertaining men in show business. Yeah. You know, it doesn't always become an entertaining guy on screen, but when the camera stops, he's like so funny and so full of great stories.
Amazing. Well, again, we want to be mindful of your time today. We appreciate
I'm sorry that I don't have a bit more time, guys.
This is
a really fun thing to talk about. Unfortunately, the day has kind of gotten away from me, and I've got about three people waiting outside that require my attention.
So we appreciate you being on it on the podcast today and talking with us about 24 and Little Mosque again. Yeah, hopefully we see another Little Mosque revival in the future.
Yeah.
Yes.
You have given us some great characters.
Yes.
You have.
Yes.
Yes. We appreciate it. So
I'm gonna give a shout out to a project I just finished. It's called Six Guns for Hire.
Okay.
It's Six Guns for Hire. It's a post-apocalyptic Western.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's really cool. Okay. I would definitely keep my eye out for it.
Okay, we will definitely link it up.
Again, shot in the thick of the pandemic.